Welcome to part two of a thing that we have tried to do already before, which is the listening show episode 66. Thank you, Papa Palpatine. What'd you call him, Papa Palps?
Execute episode 66. Yeah, Papa Palps.
We recorded a whole episode for you guys. And then not only did the episode get sick, but then I did. So something's going around.
The episode sounded kind of like you do, but way more disturbed. It was
weird.
Very strange. You didn't believe me. You thought I was lying for kicks, I guess.
No, I didn't think you were lying. I just was like, there's got to be some way to fix it.
You're in denial stage. Like, it can't be rude. There's got to be something else.
Yeah,
obviously, I went through that stage already. By the time I told you about the episode being ruined, I had gotten to the acceptance stage. So you started in a denial.
Yeah.
No, it was very strange. It has never happened before. There's no reason for it. And, even though we just tested it, it could happen because it was random. So
yeah,
let's hope it didn't. But anyway,
well, the good news is
sick. I interrupted you.
The good news is that you guys never get to hear what we talked about again, because it would be disingenuous to do it again. We talked,
yeah.
We talked about,
the opener you said is, let's talk about marriage and see where it goes or something like that. And it ended up being a bunch of stuff. It was generally about,
the internet and its influences on,
relationships
between single partners and stuff. And it was interesting. I think it was interesting, but instead I want
to
talk.
Interesting enough to go down the route of being disingenuous and trying to rehash what we talked about.
Right. It wouldn't be a same.
It'll come up on its own somehow some other time when it's appropriate or genuine.
Yeah. So instead, I have another question for you.
Yeah.
And the question is, did you ever watch the eruption of Mount St. Helens?
Hey, that's what I named my penis. No.
The eruption of Mount St. Helens is
that's the name of my penis.
That's that. What's that acronym?
So later you'll see the eruption of Mount St. Helens.
Wait. MESH. MESH is the acronym for that.
Eruption of Mount St. Helens?
Oh, wait.
That's not what that is at all. It's EMSH.
EMSH. Yeah, you're right. My bad. But did you ever see that?
No.
Dude. You should.
Okay.
Okay, here's what's crazy about it. I was thinking about it because I had a dream, a fever dream about it last night, and it was very realistic.
your mind was making a visual representation of your burning head, so it gave you a vision of a volcano erupting.
I had a very terrible time trying to sleep last night. I would it always happens when I have a fever, so I'm pretty sure I do have a fever. It used to be straight up hallucinations. I'd hallucinate like crazy, insane, scary stuff. Uh-huh. And it'd be really upsetting for everybody in the family usually. But most of the time, frankly, they'd make fun of me though. Because I was in my insane stupor of like freaking out. And it was funny to them because they're fucked up and mean to me. But anyways, last night I was having this similar kind of thing, except for it was about real things I've seen. But I was in them. There's like one video of the eruption of Mount St. Helens, and it's kind of disturbing because you picture like a volcano erupting, and you picture this, right? You picture kind of like a from the top and it kind of erupting, right?
No.
What do you picture?
Like a drink spludging over.
Yeah.
That's what
from
I
the
imagine.
Top, right? It just sort of like.
I couldn't think of a joke that would even be
penis
believable. No, the bottom. Yeah, of course the top.
Well, the documentary I watched about Mount St. Helens eruption was talking about how sudden and scary it was for everybody and how like bad it messed everything up. And the main reason was because it erupted sideways. And so literally what you're watching when you watch the video, it's like a picture taking sequential pictures. So it's like one frame every couple seconds or whatever. Because they didn't have like very good video cameras. And basically what you see is the mountain 1 second, and then you just see it like, it's like half of the mountain gets just launched.
Cool.
For like 50 miles. It's like really scary.
So you haven't seen Mount St. Helens erupt either? You saw a picture.
Well, they basically played it in like a really crappily framed video. So, I mean, technically it's a video if it's framed by frame.
Two pictures, one after the other.
No, that's like.
In a time sequence, it's technically a video.
Yeah.
Technically.
Even though. Yeah, even if
you want to be an asshole about it.
Yeah.
Oh, you already drank some. I didn't realize. I got this because you usually get this. I was like, screw it, I'll get it. It's my first time having one. It's good.
Mm-hmm. You like it?
Yeah.
I shouldn't have this at all.
It is what I thought it was, but a little bit different. Mm-hmm. I thought I was going to be chocolate coffee, which is what it is, but there's way more chocolate than coffee, which I like chocolate and I don't like coffee, so I'm happy.
Good. You don't like coffee?
No.
Really?
It tastes like there's two coffee beans worth of coffee in there a little bit, but it's just chocolate, basically.
Yeah, it's kind of like chocolate or coffee ice cream. You ever have coffee ice cream?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, it's like if I was a child and I didn't like coffee, but I thought I liked coffee mm-hmm. because my parents made this. They made chocolate with a tiny bit of coffee. And they go, "This is coffee, honey."
Yeah.
I go, "Oh, I like coffee. Like, this is great. Like, I don't know what real coffee is." Mm. Or drinking, as a kid, drinking coffee with a bunch of sugar and cream and going, "I love coffee." Like, no, you like sugar and cream.
Yeah.
That's what this is. Yeah. It's sugar and cream.
I love coffee, except for it makes me poop bad. So, like,
what's bad poop?
Oh, man. Like, my stomach was getting upset all the time because I was drinking like 3 cups a day for a little bit.
And you don't drink coffee, right? Like, I've never noticed.
I mean, yeah, I do, except for I've been trying to cut back because...
Do you drink it at work?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, a lot at work. And I replaced it basically with water, and that was a really good decision. It's, like, better. Oof. But coffee tastes so good to me. Even when it's, like, not sweet and stuff, it's just something... It just wakes you up, you know, the caffeine thing.
Yeah, sorry. Talking about this bitch. Before. I got a little bit of a brain freeze.
Mm-hmm.
And they are way worse as an adult than they were when I was a kid, I swear. I absolutely, like, I'm like, oh no, a brain freeze.
Speaking of terrible things that have happened, Mount St. Helens.
Oh no, not Doth Drinks yet, but go back to that in a second. Because you mentioned coffee, whatever. I had two energy drinks yesterday, and I haven't had two in a day for like a couple months probably. Mm. And I felt pretty sick and awful this morning. And I was like, nice to be reminded that it's not good.
Yeah.
Now that you get back to St. Helens, but I was thinking about addiction and stuff this morning. If you want to get into it, it was interesting to me. But you were not done with St. Helens, so
I don't know. I was just thinking, it's just pretty crazy that the world can just do that sometimes, like throw a mountain at people. That's literally what happened. I mean. It's like, but like,
it's a thunder battle.
I think like. Obviously, there were pieces of that mountain that went for like thousands of miles because like the dust and stuff was launched into the air.
Oh yeah.
So technically, pieces of Mount St. Helens are like all over the world right now.
Mm-hmm.
But like big chunks of mountain landed like within 30 miles. It's like crazy how far. I don't know. Just the Earth can do that. And then I think about freaking like Yellowstone, and I'm like, oh no, that's like 50 Mount St. Helens is, you know?
I hear things in chunks. It's just funny out of context. I think of like Yellowstone.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh no.
Right. I'm like that, dude. It's similar.
Oh no.
I am. Because if that thing, if Yellowstone goes today.
Now, when you say Yellowstone, I hear National Park, but that clearly isn't what you mean. Is there a volcano there?
Yeah, man. That's what Yellowstone is.
Okay.
Maybe I have the name wrong. I'm pretty sure I'm right, though. But basically, there's a super volcano that's underneath the North Americas, and it's in Yellowstone National Park. And that's why there's all these geysers with hot steam. And it is literally a super volcano that could just go off. And if it did, basically everybody in North America would die. And then probably half the world would eventually die, too.
Finally. Hey, when you call it super volcano, is that you calling it a super volcano or is it it's called a super volcano?
That's terminology.
Well, then I wonder, what is the difference between a volcano and a super volcano?
Super ones, you might have guessed
they're a bit
this.
Bigger.
They're more super, you spectacular. Go,
generally.
Size larger.
Oh my god! I know this is a rehash, and this goes against what we think is funny, saying something that happened in the past. But before we recorded, you took a bite of your McDonald's, and you said, "Don't say anything yet because I'm missing one word."
Is it disturbed?
That's the one. Thank you.
You bet. I was going to help you.
I might
you.
Get it wrong, but I believe you said you took a bite. You said it's good, but it's having a hard time going down my already disturbed throat.
Mm-hmm.
And then once again, I took that out of context. I was laughing for like 10, 15 seconds. I'm like, that's the funniest. That's what she said I've heard in a long time.
Because my throat hurts.
It was a good. That's what she said. It was worth putting up on a wall here for you guys to look at.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the only reason it's funny is because someone actually said those words in that order genuinely. And not like it was just arbitrarily made up for that's what she said joke, which is what makes that's what she said so funny.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah. More volcano or the addiction thing I was thinking about.
Yeah, go ahead.
It's not a grand idea. But
what did you think of anything with a super volcano that could explode half the world or what?
Oh, I think about it all the time. No, what are you asking exactly?
I don't know. Just say, what do you think about it?
Well, I think it won't happen.
You're like, can't hurry up?
No, it totally, I think it will happen. I got backwards. I think it will happen.
It'll just be a lot while.
Yeah, I don't, well, basically what I think is going to happen, so I can sound like a crazy person, is I think that's what's going to happen when the world ends. I think basically, there'll be eruptions everywhere.
Because
the world's going to end in fire. So I'm like, I think that's what's going to happen. I like to think with the flood idea, the water canopy or whatever, it wasn't like supernatural water just materialized in the air. It's like it's part of the planet and the ecosystem just got fucked up.
Yeah.
I like to think that's what's going to happen with fire. I'm like, well, volcanoes everywhere is all I can think about. So, yeah. Or nuclear war. I thought nuclear war could be the world ending in fire.
Yeah.
Anyway. Since you asked, I did have a thought about it.
There's a moon that goes around Jupiter. I think it's Io. I don't remember for sure though. I think it's one of the four Galilean moons. The ones that Galileo discovered when he was like, Jupiter's there. And then there's like, and Jupiter's got four big old moons, and then they figured out it's got like hundreds or whatever. But of the four major ones, there's one of them that is like has volcanoes so big that you see the plumes shoot off into space. And it's like, man, that's so cool. And the reason is because like there's a ton of magma and stuff under the crust, and Jupiter's so freaking big and fat and heavy that Jupiter's like sucking. It's like sucking a pus out of like a zit.
That's gross.
But the zit is a moon, a planet like moon.
The zit is the volcano on the moon.
And the pus is magma. It's space pus.
Yeah.
That's what magma is, basically, space pus.
Or planet pus.
Yeah.
Well, I guess, the moons are, the volcanoes are on the moon, right? Mm-hmm. Well, I guess planet pus doesn't actually count.
Moons, if they're big enough, they're planets. Like, planets are characterized by...
They have their own orbit.
Around a star.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. But like, and as far as the characteristics that we have, like our planet has, like atmosphere and stuff, tons of moons have atmospheres. Like, what's Neptune's? I can't remember the name of Neptune's.
Neptune's moon?
Yeah, big Neptune's
I've
big.
I've never known the planets' moons or that they had moons. All I did was learn the names of the planets and where they are relative to each other.
Oh wow! Yeah, a lot of them have a lot. Like, I think Mercury doesn't. You want to know a cool space thing really quick?
Sure.
Okay, so when people studied Mercury, it's the you know it's the closest to the sun and it's really pretty small.
Yeah.
It's pretty comparable in size.
It's actually the smallest one, I think.
Technically it is now, yes. But because it's so close to the sun, if they were to send probes there, if like you can't just shoot a probe directly at Mercury, even if it's right there, because the sun will just keep sucking it. Yeah. It won't get caught in Mercury's gravity.
Yeah.
And so like a guy who went to this college, you know, 20 years ago, whenever they sent the probe to Mercury, he had to create a flight pattern around the solar system to where gravity from other stars and stuff would send it in at a perfect angle to get caught in Mercury's gravity and not the sun's. And so basically the pathing, it went like around Mars and then through the Kuiper belt a little bit, and then it kind of spun around and it caught Earth again, and then Earth like slingshotted it around the other way, and then just the way that it slingshotted it around the sun like made it slowly decaying orbit towards the sun over like 4-year period. But basically it had to take this really roundabout way through the whole solar system just to catch the gravity just right in Mercury. And even then the orbit was something called an elliptical orbit, and so when it finally did catch Mercury, it got so close to the planet it just didn't crash. Eventually decaying orbit crashed, but elliptical orbit, it would if this is Mercury, this is the satellite, it was doing like a super linear orbit.
Yeah, it
would
go
and it would pass by the planet within like 10 miles or something crazy, and so it would just go and just fly by super fast. And eventually it just crashed and everybody was like, you did it. You made it to Mercury. Anyway,
that's cool.
I thought it was cool. I never knew that much thought went into just the flight pathing to make it to Mercury. But
like, I imagine some complicated flight pattern path stuff, but nothing that complicated that was actually done.
Yeah.
In movies, like, we're going to slingshot around the sun. Mm-hmm. Wow. Like, well, that's child's play compared to what's actually been done. Yeah. Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wish I could just pull up the flight path for you because I think it ended up doing like several revolutions around the sun before it even got close to Mercury kind of thing. Kind of deal.
I feel bad even mentioning the addiction thing because it's so far from your space tirade.
No, go ahead. We can talk about whatever we want. That's because we can listen about whatever we want. And that's what the show is all about.
That's all about.
It's what it's all about, listening.
So. You want to hear the most annoying sound in the world? You want to listen to this?
Mm-hmm.
No. So, again, not a grand idea, although I do wish I could illustrate it on a board or something. So, in my mind, addiction kind of works like this. Percentages, let's just do like 100 points, whatever, so it's easy to illustrate. 0% addicted, 100% addicted, 50%. What happens when you're 50% addicted? It means addiction happens, in my opinion, or is your body's reliance or expectancy for a substance.
Oh, yeah.
That's my definition of it. So if I'm addicted to energy drinks, it means it's expected. Okay, you're going to have another one in the next 48 hours, right? Like there's a window of...
Or there will be physiological consequences if you don't.
Yes. And yeah. I'll get to that. But specifically, it's your body expects this. Mm-hmm. So if I haven't been drinking, it doesn't expect it. But that happens with time. Anyway, so if you get to 50%, that means let's throw an arbitrary number, 24 hours. And the next, it expects a drink in the next 24 hours. If you're at 50, it doesn't know. But if you're in the next 24 hours, if you were to have a drink, you're now 51% addicted. You're technically addicted. If you didn't, in the next 20, 49, whatever, 50%.
Oh, you've got a precipice that you could pass?
Yes, there's a climax.
Oh, okay.
No, it works like this. There's time, there's 0, 50, and 100, and then it does this. The point is, I was thinking about that because I'll have one every once in a while, but I know I'm not addicted because I may suffer a short-term side effect, if any, because I'm close to zero. But if I drink like three or four, like one a day for the 3 or 4 days, then day five is especially bad, more so than it would have been if I had one drink one day and then the next day I feel completely fine. But there is a number over an occurrence of time where if you have enough, you get over 50%, you're addicted. And so I've been wondering, I'm sure it depends on the person. I'm wondering how much you have to go to get addicted or whatever. So anyway, the moral of the story is I am not addicted, but I'm playing between 0 and 50.
To energy drinks?
To where I can stop or have some and then be fine the next day because I had one or two and it doesn't bother me. So yeah, whatever. I was just thinking like, you'd have to do a lot. You have to drink a lot to get addicted. And then, you know, if you want to go from 100 to 0, that's hard. If you want to go to 0 to 100, that takes time. But 50 and 0, is, I don't know how that works.
Yeah.
That could have been explained a lot better, but that's what I was thinking about.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, my thing is like, man, your body just... I forgot
to mention that because you said coffee.
That's one of the... One thing we actually talked about on our last episode that got exploded was how I used the word malleable and you used the word adaptive.
Adaptable.
Yeah. And then... people's bodies and people are like people, they adapt well. And I guess one of the cons of that is if they adapt to a certain kind of lifestyle and then that changes, it's really shock. It's a big shock to the body system, especially if it stops like cold turkey is what they call it.
Yeah. I don't know why they call it that.
Yeah. That's a good question. I don't know either.
I assumed it had to do with,
I think it is because it's a shock to the system. And if you slap cold turkey on someone's skin, it's like, oh, I think there's something like that that it came from.
I thought it had something to do with like farm life actually killing and preparing food. Cookie. I have no idea. Anyway, go on. Malleable and adaptable.
Yeah. So like, I feel like even like in more serious things, like like when there's a death.
More serious things.
Yeah.
Us making noises.
More thing, like serious things in life that people go through, like death or something. Like part of the thing that's so shocking about it is because you just, you stop cold turkey with that person forever. You just don't get to see them anymore.
What a funny way of saying that.
I don't know. It's, that's the way I've thought about death. It's like, man, you've had access to this thing, whether you were addicted or not, you know, but you've been able to access this person whenever you want. And then all of a sudden you just can't.
Well, the people you're addicted to, like friends and family, that is a shock to the system.
Yeah.
But other substances, other people that you're not addicted to, their deaths don't impact you nearly as much.
Right. It's funny that we're using the word addicted.
I was like, oh, I like that candy. I'm a candy person, but I like that candy. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize how much I would miss that candy now that I know I can't have it again. That's a bad example. But it's a funny idea to say that losing someone is like going cold turkey on that person.
Yeah. It's like you were addicted.
It sounds crude, but it's oddly profound at the same time.
Yeah. I don't know why, but I've always thought of it kind of callously like that. And like, obviously, if you've partaken in someone every day of your life, like it's your spouse and they die, it's like, physiologically and psychologically don't know what to do without that person.
It's a physical condition called heartbreak.
Yeah, well, it's in some ways it's kind of like a death.
In the same crude thing you were talking about, what was it? I thought you were going to say this. And I was thinking it. Shoot, death, addiction, right? People are adaptable. People are malleable. People can adapt to death. People are remarkably adaptable is what I think is they can do almost anything, whether they want to or not. So if you're somebody who lose the worst person you could possibly lose, your spouse, you think you're going to die and you want to die and all that, and somehow you get better. And then the next person you care about dies. Mm-hmm. Same process again. Then the next person you care, and it keeps happening to you.
Mm-hmm.
Or it could all happen at once. Unbearable loss, and you can still persevere. You can still go on. The fact that humans can do that stuff is amazing to me. So adaptable, I use that word instead of malleable, because adaptable means, in my opinion, that the difference is it's more of a virtue. Malleable sounds like you're clay. Adaptable sounds like problem solving. It's like you've overcome. It's like overcoming almost. Malleable is you slip through the cracks. Adaptable is you fit in the crack.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that makes any difference.
No, I like it. That's a good observation of their differences. I still use the word malleable because I believe
it. I'm just saying that's why I chose the word I chose.
I think it's more accurate. I don't know. Like, how do you know how you adapt to things?
How I do it? No.
Right. That's kind of to me why malleable is a better word. Like, we don't know.
Yeah, we
don't know how we can adapt to things or whatever. And it's almost, in a sense, biblically, like, well, you can't adapt to anything, but you can be shaped to adapt to things, which I believe is it's more malleable than.
Yeah, sometimes it's not so virtuous.
Yeah.
Sometimes it is.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, like how shitty it feels to like be to stop something cold turkey and how your body just like beats the crap out of you for it. And
you mean like actual physical substance, not. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nothing analogous like emotions or lifestyle, like literally just ingestion. We're talking.
Yeah.
About.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's pretty tough.
It's the worst. Yeah. Actually.
You can imagine. Well, and it's factual that. I mean, factual as anything can be, but like it's like an observable thing that the more intense the substance that you partake in, the more intense the process of cutting it off is too.
Yeah, but
I think that's why like, and you know, correlating addiction to like relationships and stuff, I think that's why it hits some people so hard when relationships are over, if it's like a really like powerful or potent relationship or something. Both people are very like emotionally tied up in it and stuff, and like some people would break up and they're like, yeah, no, it just didn't work out and we're still friends and stuff. And then people more like me, it's usually something akin to like, I felt like I had to sever a limb because it was just like everything got all tangled kind of
thing. I have thoughts about that. I don't know if any are worth sharing, although I will say If we're talking in analogous terms with addiction and relationships, I think typically, and this is obviously not true for everybody all the time because people are all different, but I think typically for guys, it's harder to lose that addiction because we tend to be happy with the one substance. More often for girls, when they lose their substance, whatever, it's really easy to pick up another substance to get another relationship. They have more options typically.
Mm-hmm.
And I say typically, but obviously that depends on a lot of things. But
mm-hmm.
So it's you typically a bigger loss for guys, I think. Yeah. That's like part of many things that I want to get into, but you mentioned it and I wanted to say something.
Yeah. It's women's fault is what you want to say.
Right. I was saying, I told you, I don't know. Everything went downhill when they got rights. Ow. No, that's what it is. It's like I always say. And then you say that this stupid thing.
It's a stupid, ignorant.
You know, I always say this. They should never have gotten rights.
Ow.
Sorry about your head. But also, doesn't it, if you were in my position, wouldn't you feel a little good if you made me laugh so hard that my head hurt? Because yeah. Like, you'd feel like bad. Also, like, yeah, I got him.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so I'm sorry, but also,
no, that's good. Oh, boy. That reminds me of when my dad had heart surgery and my uncle came and told him this funny story.
You should tell this story really quick because it's funny.
I wish I could remember the specific details, but it was something more or less. Basically, my dad was like 35 at the time. It's been 17 years since this. Holy cow. But when he had his open heart surgery, they ripped open his chest. And for all intents and purposes, he was in constant pain all the time. His rib cage, it's still literally tied together by wires. The other day he goes, Zach, feel this. And I felt and his wires were like kind of bulging out of his skin because he's lost so much weight. And I was like, Dad, that's crazy. But he was given, when you have open heart surgery, one of the cool kind of trophies you get from it is they give you a pillow that everybody signs and it's in the shape of a heart. And they give it to you because you need something. It feels good to press something soft against your chest so that when you breathe, it just doesn't hurt as bad or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And my uncle, my dad's brother, came in. He had young children at the time and he basically went to visit my dad and he goes, okay, Brian, grab your pillow. My dad's like, oh no. And so he grabs his pillow and he's in, you know, a lot of pain. And
then my uncle, hard to breathe, just like,
yeah,
just like very still and like labor. That's the word.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And I wasn't there for this, but dad and my uncle Kurt told us this story a lot later. But basically the story was like, he was going to kiss his daughter goodnight, his young toddler age daughter.
He's telling the story to your dad while he's in bed.
Mm-hmm. And so he goes in there and he does what his bedtime ritual for his daughter, and he grabs her hand, he kisses it, and he smells him, and he smells bad. He's like, Pharaoh, why do your hands smell bad? Where have they been? And she says, in my butt. And so, and of course, my dad, my uncle recalls it by my dad going, because he's like laughing, labor, but it hurt.
Breathing, yeah. So, that's a great example story for what we were just talking about. Like, it's, you feel bad, but also like, got him.
Yeah.
Make you suffer with laughter.
Yeah.
This isn't a good example, but it's an example. We were here in this very home, and you had a very bad migraine, as you get migraines.
Yeah.
And you were laying on a couch, writhing in pain and wailing, not like obnoxious. I mean, it was a lot of noise, but it was warranted. Like, you're in a lot of pain. Man, just pain.
Like, that's,
gosh. And I'm sitting on one of the couches and then passing without thinking. I just says, like, you know, my toe kind of hurt. You go, my toe kind of hurts. And then we all laughed because it was really funny. And then you're laughing and crying. Because it was hurting your head.
Well, I was like,
because it was all after you've been just moaning for so long. I was up. You know, I think my toe kind of, my toe kind of, you just stop.
It was like in that moment I had a brief, just a second of clarity, and I realized how ridiculous I've been for the past 10 minutes, and then I was jumped on an opportunity for a joke, is what it was. And,
but it's a little bit different because, like I said, it's not the perfect example because you made yourself laugh, but still, it's really funny.
Yeah. Hey, my toe hurts.
Here's another example. One time, I was walking into a doorway and I just slammed my knee. I just banged it really hard on the doorway, and when I grabbed my elbow, I went, ow! And just like we both laughed, I realized what I had just done. So my knee's hurting and I'm just laughing. I can't believe I did that.
Yeah.
Good times. Yeah. Laughing while in pain or some kind of joke like that.
I always like when I'm doing like some sort of mildly not painful, but kind of painful games. Like, you know, the slapping game or like the flicking game, you know, those kind of games where it's a test of endurance to see who can endure the most pain without bowing out. Mm. My favorites are when I'm playing that game. I'm pretty good at those because I'm just really pain tolerant. But if I'm ever playing with someone who's like obviously losing that game, and then I just pretend to do the painful thing and they go, ow, you know, they always would regularly, but I didn't actually reflexively
act like they're in pain.
Yeah. Exactly. Because they're planning to be in pain. And I always like, I didn't even touch you. Yeah. You know, like, I like doing that.
That's funny.
I can think of many times when I've pulled that move off. Cause they were just, ow, you know, like, oh, got you. Didn't even do it. Gosh. No. So tying this all back to Mount St. Helens.
So what?
Tying this all back to Mount St. Helens.
Okay, I thought that's what you said.
Uh-huh. Sometimes a lot of people were in pain with Mount St. Helens.
Oh my gosh. It just the laziest and most obnoxious tie. That was offensive how bad that was. A lot of people were in pain with Mount St. Helens.
When Mount St. Helens erupted, a lot of people felt
the
pain.
The earth was in pain. Yeah. Actually.
Yeah. I bet for the earth, it was probably relieving.
Yeah.
Like,
it was
finally.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Get out of me.
Get that hot earth skin spludge out.
My earth pus.
Yeah. Planet pus. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess we could talk more about space because there's another moon for Jupiter, one of the Galilean moons called Europa. And let me just tell you something. Europa has freaking water, and it's all underground there. They have a whole planet is covered in ice, but then near to the center of a mass structure in the universe, it's always hotter because the gravity affects it. And there's something, it's like a sweet zone, like a honey spot, a honey hole, where the temperature is just right and it's just sustainable enough that technically, if there is extraterrestrial life, it could live there. And life is kind of weird and it can survive in all these crazy conditions and stuff. And so people are like, well, yeah, life can survive without any light. It gets underneath like miles of like ice and rock. So it's probably pitch black, but there's possibly like simple life down there. And so everybody's planning on in the next decade or 12 years or so to send a freaking moon probe to Europa. There's a horror movie about it. Mm-hmm. Like they send astronauts there to take samples and stuff, and then there's aliens and the aliens beat them up.
Of course,
yeah.
I'm sure this has been done, but I've seen these tropey alien movies and thought as a kid, I know it's been done. In fact, I remember seeing a black and white short in the Twilight Zone that used stop motion. It was so old, but the idea that. Because the trope is always the aliens are violent and they attack and they are more powerful in advance every time. Like, what if it was the other way around? Because we see ourselves as so virtuous. Mm-hmm. We come across aliens and they are underdeveloped and we're tyrannical to them. But in our eyes, we're just studying you. But to them, we're like dissecting them and abducting them, you know?
Yeah.
So in this one, it doesn't matter what I saw. But that idea, I know it's been done. I can only recall that one Twilight Zone instance. I can vaguely remember, but I'd like to see that done well. The idea that the roles are reversed.
Mm-hmm.
Because you said, and then the aliens attack. Like, of course they do.
Uh-huh.
Of course they do.
Yeah, statistically, the odds would be something akin to the other way around.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, isn't it just the odds, too, that we're not... That we are the advanced one, especially if we sojourn.
Yeah. There was an interesting, I don't know who to credit or attribute this quote to, but there was a scientist who was quoting us saying the only difference between animals and humans scientifically is that humans can hurt with intent or like with malevolence. So humans are capable of malevolence, whereas animals largely aren't.
Was that the key word?
Yeah. Malevolence.
Yeah, I get that idea.
So like animals hurt things, obviously, but there's almost always an alternate motive. It's either social status posturing or like sexual stuff, you know,
just, or like, self-preservation.
Right. Or even just eating, you know, like animals hurt all kinds of animals for a bunch of different reasons, but it always makes sense evolutionarily.
Yeah, it's pragmatic.
Humans are like the only animals, this scientist postured, but he basically said that humans are the only ones that will do it just to do it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I had some thoughts about that, but that goes too far. We won't get into that, but I get it.
Uh-huh. What goes too far?
Oh, I was not going to say, and I'm being annoying by continually not talking about it, so let's just move on.
Was it about women again?
Yes.
It was, actually?
Yeah.
I want to hear it now.
Okay. see if I can formulate it at least a little bit.
With the caveat that it's probably not true.
I don't have enough in my brain right now. I'm not doxing it if that's not the right word. If it comes to mind, oh, I know I want to say it, then I'll say it. But right now, I just can't put it together.
Okay. There was life on Mount St. Helens.
Human, on Earth?
Human lives. I'm tying now humans and humanity and stuff back to Mount St. Helens. I'm trying to tie everything back to Mount St. Helens.
You know who was affected by Mount St. Helens was women.
Yeah, women, human lives.
Human women's. Yeah. It's all brought back to Mount St. Helens.
Yeah. Uh-huh. My grandpa, he told me when Mount St. Helens erupted, he saw the cloud. I don't remember where he was, but he told me from however many hundreds or thousands of miles away, he saw the cloud of dust from the eruption blowing.
When did that happen?
I don't know. The 70s, maybe? Mm. I'm not sure. Maybe the 80s. I don't know, dude. I'm just thinking, though.
Why?
Yellowstone. If Yellowstone goes, we're all screwed. For real.
There's no movie about that, though, is there?
I don't know.
It seems like a movie.
It seems like they should.
A movie that should happen if it's so obvious kind of thing.
Yeah. For real.
More obvious than Sharknado. It's like you have this material here. Hey, we have a volcano that could destroy everything.
Yeah, I feel like it hit a little too close to home, literally. Oh. But people don't have
about World War III, which rightfully so. It's like an open idea, but like what about the volcano that's going to destroy everybody?
Yeah. What's crazy is I'm pretty sure the status of that volcano is dormant with a question mark, more or less. It's like, well, we think it's dormant.
Yeah, it sounds very official and scientific.
I know. I don't remember. That's obviously partially a joke because I don't know, but that's basically
status
the equivalent.
Safe?
Yeah. We think? Yeah.
That's like the most useless, unsure status to have. Safe? Question mark. I would love that. Slap that label on something.
Yeah.
Anything. Uh-huh. If it's banal, like a vegetable or like a can of liquid, safe. Like,
yeah.
It doesn't help you at all. It means nothing.
Yeah.
I love it. I'm going to use that label on things now. Safe?
Safe? Yeah, I think it'd be cool. I don't know if technically this exists, but technically, like in the same way that we were talking about, there is the best nickel balancer in the world somewhere. Like
were we talking about that on the show? Because I feel like we were talking about
that a long time
downstairs.
Ago. It was like episode 6.
Oh.
But in the same way that there is a best of everything, they just might not know they're the best at it or whatever. There is technically a most safe place on the world from catastrophe,
I
think.
But in case you're not mistaken, because I know what I was thinking about, we were talking about that downstairs. You said there was an old photo of a guy who had balanced a bicycle on a thing, but not the nickel.
Yeah.
So anyway, not maybe it's not important, but I was about to say, I do recall we were talking about that like a week or two ago downstairs.
Yeah, balance and stuff. Yeah, we were. We also on the show talked, like I made a joke about I'm the best nickel balancer in the world.
That I remember too. But they were two different things.
But I bet if enough accumulated information just from like the geographical tectonic plate information, all those like scientific graphics and stuff, And then you compile that with information about where active or inactive volcanoes or potential or tsunamis, you know, like, and then maybe you even from that point you were to track like asteroid patterns and where they're most likely to hit from or whatever. There has to be somewhere on this earth a place that is safest from catastrophe compared to every other place. And I wonder if anybody has, first of all, figured that out, and two, is paranoid enough to have gone there and like set up shop, you know?
I bet number one, like totally, but whether it's correct or incorrect, someone has tried to and with an answer. I'm certain of that. I'd guess so. But number two is an interesting question. You know, there's lots of movies that show about how paranoid the government is, and they have all these contingencies for crazy things, and they've been prepared for it. But I don't think so. Here's how I really feel about it. I think people are really goddamn lazy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that they have not done what you just proposed because they are lazy, even if they should have.
Well, if you know, then you have to do something with that information.
No, not if you're lazy. I think people are lazy. I think people are.
Well, you have to do something with it, even if the something you have to do is nothing. Like, you got it. I mean, you're then responsible if you, like, it's the same thing you were talking about with, if I don't know, then I'm not responsible. It's like, yeah, well.
No, I'm saying they did number one. Uh-huh. They know there is a safest place.
Uh-huh.
Therefore, they know they should probably set up shop there. But I'm saying they should, morally, they should do number two, but I think people are lazy and they won't. So they don't think they did number two. I don't think they set up shop there.
I'll tell you the things that I would probably do. I'd probably get away from all the oceans. I'd probably get away from the center of tectonic plates. I would probably go towards the center of tectonic plates.
Yeah.
And that's super landlocked. I'd stay away from all the volcanoes.
I basically go out to nowhere.
Well, unfortunately, like still going to encounter storms and stuff, but you know, tornadoes or whatever. You want to hear an interesting tornado story?
Sure.
I was banking in Lawrence, Kansas. I had a job there a few years ago. And one of our customers, he was this Native American guy. He was really old. He was like 99, like 95, 99. But he was pretty spry for that age. Like he'd walk in on 2 feet. He'd get his stuff. And he, you know, he just looked like he kept himself in good shape. Had long, dark hair. Anyway, and at some point we were talking, he goes, "Where are you from?" And I said, "I'm from, right now I live in Tonganoxie, Kansas." And he goes, "Oh, did you know my great-grandfather was the chief in Tonganoxie back in the days, you know, in the old days?" And he goes, "You know, a story about Tonganoxie is that my great-grandfather and his tribe, they led a prayer for 90 days. And the prayer was the prayer against blessings, a blessing prayer against terrible storms because it was being hit by storms." And he said, "And since then, never has a tornado hit that area." And I was like, "Is that true?" And he's like, "Yeah, I believe he prayed the storms away from Tonganoxie, the wind storms." Uh-huh. And I looked it up and I didn't see any listings of tornadoes in Tonganoxie ever recorded. I thought that was, I was like, I wonder if he was telling the truth. And then I thought further than that, like, I wonder if God was like, yeah.
Yeah, all right.
I'll give you that.
All right.
You know?
Yeah, yeah. I've seen that too. I was like, God's like, all right.
90 days? You bet.
And then I was also like, if they're praying to the wrong God, God's a jealous God. He's not going to abide that.
So yeah,
maybe,
well,
if it was just a generic prayer to any God that's listening, God's like, I'm listening. Like, all right. I was thinking that too.
Well, it's just like, you know, I don't know. In some sense, God is
the God of whatever. So
yeah, if he's the God of creation, yeah, and you're praying to that God.
At the same time, like, if you're praying to a golden calf, he's not going to be like, all right.
Yeah, that's me. I'm a golden calf. Yeah, no, it's like, yeah, not. Yeah. Right. I don't know. I just think that, I don't know. First of all, I believe that guy because his eyes kind of lit up when he was telling me about that. And I was like, that's so cool. And I told my family that later and they're like, interesting. You know, kind of that sort of skeptical, but I don't know way. But I tend to believe him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Doing anything for 90 days, we should get a sticker, you know, at least a little star sticker.
I did something for 90 days.
A supernatural sticker.
A supernatural sticker.
On your, like, head.
So stupid.
Yeah. What is that? Did that make you think of anything?
When we were talking about lazy, it made me think about something. It lent to a piece of the thing that I could not put together about nature was the topic. I didn't say as much, but anyway, I hadn't completed a thought, so no, I have nothing to contribute. Sorry.
No, that's okay. All right, you want to wrap up?
Not really, but also probably should if you want to. I'm enjoying talking and all, but
I am too.
This is going all over the place, and we do have to end soon.
Yeah, and my nose is
We took bets on how many times you'd blow your nose before we started recording, and I only saw you do it once.
One time.
Okay.
So far, I needed to do it more than that, but I just am swallowing it.
We're both wrong, but I'm less wrong.
Yeah?
Does that mean I win?
Wait, no, you're not less wrong. I said under 5, and you said 4.
Yeah.
So I'm more accurate because
no, you're not.
I'm exactly right, and you're not right.
No, if that, you were trying to explain this rule to me, but if under 5 means 1, 2, 3, 4...
Yeah. Okay, so I was trying to explain the over.
That's several guesses, and that's not fair.
Yeah, but I'm the accurate answer, and you're not. That's why I win. But I was explaining over and under.
If we're playing by Price is Right rules, which are the right rules, then I win.
No, we're playing by over and under rules, and I tried to explain them to you, but I'm not a good explainer. And then I was trying to describe how you pick the line, is what they call it, and the line is the best, your best guess at the most pop or the most likely to occur number. And then you pick over or under because you have to.
But yeah. Here's an idea I have that I don't have words for that I'm certain must exist that I want to understand. I think it's a mathematical idea or a philosophical, I don't know. The idea that if it's disproved once, it's not true. The idea that the majority can't always be right if it failed once. The idea that... So it's... The closest example I have, and this isn't even a good example, is in the movie Interstellar when they're trying to solve an equation and the professor says to the protagonist, it only, like, let's run the test through new fields. And she's like, it's failed dozens of times. Mm-hmm. He's like, it only has to work once and then it works. It's the opposite of that. It's the idea that it has worked every single time, but this one time it has failed when we run through the simulations. Therefore, this is not a reliable idea. Mm-hmm. Whatever, if there's a mathematical...
Assuming that all of your parameters are already established and proven, then yeah, if it fails at all, then it doesn't work. But the thing is that nobody knows all the parameters for everything all the time. So yeah,
well, to people who say it has, it's going to work because it usually works. Like, no, that's not how that works. It means there's a good chance it will work. It doesn't mean it will work because it has failed once. Because it has failed once means it will not always work. That's all it means. Mm-hmm. And there are people, anyway... I wish I could understand and put it into words, and I'm sure someone has already explained this. It's like a math idea, like Euclid's Common Notions and stuff, where it's just these are mathematical truths, basically, because they're literally mathematical truths because they work.
They're just observations.
Right.
Yeah.
Anyway. But you understand what I'm talking about. That's the point. You understood what I was trying to say as an idea. I just couldn't put it into words.
You're talking about the scientific method, technically. It's like if it doesn't work, you have to start your theory over again.
It's empirical. It's like measurable stuff. It's not like it's numbers. Whatever.
I don't know. I'm just increasingly becoming skeptical of every provable thing. I just am.
Well, that's the idea. Is it's provable, but if you can prove it doesn't work just once, then there's no reason to believe it anymore. So if you're skeptical of things that are.
I get what you're saying, except for there's always new information. And so everything that has been disproven before with new information has to be retested.
You can never be sure that something always works, but you can always be sure when something doesn't, is another way of saying it. So it lends to your idea of being skeptical of what's proven.
It comes down to whether your parameters are accurate. It's like it can a thing that doesn't work cannot work because your parameters are wrong. But your presumption, you have a baseline presumption, is that given that you do everything right, if something doesn't work, then it doesn't work. It's wrong. And it's like, yeah, but it's not common for every parameter to be right. It's more common for your parameters to be wrong, and then you have to fix them, and then eventually you might stumble on it being right, kind of thing.
I said this to you, in most areas, I'm a 6, and we kind of talked about our IQ or whatever. But I could feel my intellect hitting its cap, like there's a ceiling. I can't think any more harder than that. It was like really funny. And I was this is a thought I had, and I would like to hear you contribute to this idea that people with below average intelligence typically, or however you want to put it, stupid people tend to think that they're smart.
Yeah.
Smart people, they know they're smart. There are dumb people who think they're smart, but there are no smart people who think that they're dumb is the main difference.
I think they might
be humble, but they know by observing other people that they know more than them. And they know by their success. Yeah.
But if you're really smart,
on average.
Yeah.
Well, okay, this isn't the crux of it. This is just this method of. So in the middle, I've wondered about people with average intelligence. I like to think there's half and half. Half people with average intelligence think they're smart. Half with average think that they're dumb. They're easier. Anyway, if I am a 6 in general intelligence, does that mean I have a proclivity to be aware of my limitations, or am I dumb enough to where I just should think I'm smart? Because I like to think I'm at the level of intelligence where it's the thing, we said this before on a video, I think, where the only thing I know is that I don't know anything. You're at that level of intelligence.
Right.
Which intelligent people at 10 level, they have that too, but you've just, my question is, you know, like your guess, between 1 and 10, at what number do you gain self-awareness for intelligence, meaning I know that I'm smart or dumb? What number generally?
It can be 1. Like, it just doesn't matter. Okay,
if it can be 1, fine. But what number is the majority? Like, it's,
oh, gosh, one, I don't know. I don't know. I don't think it matters either.
Well, this is interesting to me. At 1% of intelligence, dumb people, 90% think that they're smart, maybe. At 2%, 80% think that they're smart. At 3%, 3.2%.
It doesn't really matter what I think.
Numbers like that interest me.
I know.
But then it curves way off, I think, at about 6, at number 6 intelligence, only 10% think that they're actually smart. And then by 70 or 80, that they know that they're smart.
I don't know. The true sign of intelligence is knowing how dumb you are, basically. It's like when, I mean.
That's a fun way of putting it.
Well, and I've observed this in different things I've taken up. Like, the better I've gotten at something, like, I'm a very capable piano player. I know theory really well, and I can play a lot of things. Like, I'm very capable, is what I would say. Most people would say I'm a great pianist, but I know I suck at piano.
Yeah.
Because I know enough about piano to know how much I don't know.
Yeah.
And I think intelligence works that same way, too. It's like, truly, the more you know, the more you're like, oh, I don't know anything. It's because everything is infinitely complicated. So, like, you might be able to track.
Yeah, so inversely.
You might be able to track a lot of it, but you know that you've maybe, even in all your years, maybe you know 20% of a thing. It's like, yeah, that's how everything works.
Different way of saying the same thing, and you can say it's not always true, whatever, but you said the sign of intelligence is knowing that you don't know everything, and I'd say inversely, believing you know everything is a sign of not being intelligent.
You could say that, so, generally.
And I think generally, dumb people or not smart people think that they're smart because that's how it's defined.
I mean, everyone's smart compared to someone.
It comes with the territory type of thing. And I think that's true for not all, but most dumb people. Like, for example, Forrest Gump as a character, he knows he's not smart. He knows limitations, but whatever.
I don't know. Everything is just because literally what's
more true for this than for that. More
right.
True that, that's all.
It's just.
Comes to the territory, like you said. I'll shut up. You said it already. You can say what you want. I'll shut up. Are you a talker?
Yeah. I think everyone's smart compared to someone. There's one dumbest person ever, but. So, like, for instance, I'm thinking of people who posture like they're really smart, like news anchors and stuff for certain, like, news companies and stuff. Everyone's like, oh, yeah, that guy thinks he's really smart and stuff, and he acts like he's really smart, or she acts like they're really smart. And maybe to a lot of people they are, and so a lot of people rely on their information or their intelligence to make determined decisions. But most smart people, like truly smart people, think those guys are idiots. And they're correct, because even though they're smart compared to some people, they know so little. Mm-hmm. Like, you can think of a lot of people who are in that smart for a lot of people category that are just really stupid. And it's like they get so much wrong. And that's kind of what it comes down to. It's like, if you, even if you stumble on the right answer, good enough. But don't pretend, I don't know. It's pretending like you're smart enough to give people answers and stuff is another problem too. I don't know. I don't know. There's something in there. There's something in there.
Yeah. Actually, there is something in there. I don't know if this is what, I don't know if it was in there, but it made me think about a topic, but it'd be a topic for another episode, and I won't even say what it is.
Okay.
I'll just, next time I'll say, how about this? And if we go for
it. Will you remember it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I think it's a fun topic, but whatever. I don't want to tease too much.
Would be interesting. Putting it as simply as I can, I think that there is intelligence, but it varies so broadly that it doesn't matter as much as leadership. Like, there's leaders and there are followers, and you might be able to lead a bunch of people who might not be very intelligent, but that doesn't mean you're intelligent. Like, you can be a not smart person, be a leader.
Yeah.
And that comes in the category of leaders of thought too. And so it's like, you can be a scientist, you can be an intelligent scientist, but you're not a scientist. You are a scientist, but you're more a leader than a scientist. All you're doing is leading people to information. I don't know. As if you're a professional in any field, you're a leader of something. That you're a leader in a field. And
whether you want to be or not.
Right. And so it just comes down to, are you leading people to accurate information or intelligent answers? Or are you just leading? I don't know.
That's a whole other topic. But that one's not as interesting to me as the one I have not said. So I'm going to forget that one. But
yeah,
I was interested in where that could have gone. But
okay,
we are out of time. Where's that from? We are out of time.
It's a movie. The Neverending Story?
What?
The Neverending Story?
No. Wait. There's like a hand on a cheek. We are out of time. And I don't like the character. That's all I remember. I'll remember after this is over. You guys don't need to know. Don't worry about it.
Okay, well, thanks for joining us. And
I'm so annoyed. Just to end this episode. Everything's ruined for all time.
Why are you annoyed?
Because I can't remember. It's an itch in my brain. I need to scratch it.
All right, you have like a few seconds.
No, do it.
I'm going to give you 10 seconds.
Here's how it's going to work. I won't remember until you end the episode. So
you have 5 seconds.
So end it so I can remember. That's just how it is. End the episode.
3, 2, 1.
Bye.
Ass.